Chairman Martin, it is now 5:30.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome everyone to the March 2nd, 2023 meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Engineering and Operations Committee meeting. I'm sitting in for Chairman Bill Cooper. My name is Gary Martin. Bill will be joining us shortly, I believe, and he'll take over once he gets here. Our announcements for committee meeting tonight are as follows. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Summit Circle Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or the Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting, and to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click on the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called upon by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We do have members of the public present, so I remind members of the public that are attending in person that there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return to the admin to help expedite public comments. Procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I or the chair will introduce each agenda item staff will present. I or the chair will ask for public comments. I or the chair then asks for discussion and questions from the committee members. Please raise your hand. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. Please consider putting these items on consent calendar when possible. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. All committee members are present with the exception of Chairman Bill Cooper, who is planning to arrive at approximately 6 o'clock tonight. He's running late. We now will continue with the meeting agenda as posted. Item one, Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise and raise the flag and join me in a salute to our great flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We can now move to item two, public comment. I don't see any public comment cards for item two. Item two is public comments on items. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. Comments may, at the discretion of the committee chair, be limited to 3 minutes for each speaker, and that's what we will do tonight. Are there any public comments online?
Seeing none.
Very good. We move to item three, recommend approval of adopting a resolution authorizing SCV Water to execute the agreement settling real estate property rights between SCV Water and Woodside 05S, LP, and required CEQA finding. Presenter tonight, Christine Jacob.
Hello, good evening, Chairman Martin and committee members. So my name is Christina Jacob, right-of-way agent here at SCV Water. And thank you, Liz. Okay, So this evening, I bring before you an item seeking approval for authorizing SCV Water to execute the agreement to settle real property rights between SCV Water and Woodside, and also the required CEQA finding of exemption. Next slide, please. The subject property is located south of the 14 freeway between Lost Canyon Road and Sand Canyon Road. This map is Exhibit I in your packets for reference. Next slide, please. For its MetroWalk development, Woodside has entered into an agreement to purchase property that includes a portion of land on which SCV Water operates our Sand Canyon Pipeline project. The red outline on the left is the portion of the plan that impacts the real property. The aerial on the right on this slide shows the approximate location of our pipeline. While doing due diligence for the project, Woodside showed that property condemned to our predecessor in interest, Castaic Lake Water Agency, or CLWA, had items on title that needed clearing up. Eminent domain records showed that the recorded temporary construction easement had no self-executing termination date provision, and that it is unclear whether CLWA acquired an easement on the project property or the interest. Next slide, please. The eminent domain action was undertaken in 2006 by CLWA and its then counsel McCormick, Kidman, and Barons LLP. SCV Water's current counsel, Best and Krieger, or BB&K, completed a thorough review of eminent domain documents obtained from court files and was unable to determine whether CLWA obtained an easement or property in fee, as each document found had a different suggestion of the property rights acquired. So starting from the left on this slide, the blue block shows the resolution of necessity, which is Exhibit C in your packets. That showed the acquisition of a 40-foot wide easement, a legal description named permanent easement, and a temporary construction easement, or TCE, for the Sand Canyon Pipeline project, which is actually no longer required because the project construction was completed. So this is not an issue to release. But moving on to the green box in the middle, the stipulation for entry of judgment, which is Exhibit D in your packets, does not clearly state whether an easement or fee interest was acquired, but it does mention that certain parcels were acquired, but not permanent easements over these parcels. So this suggests the acquisition of a fee interest. This strongly implies that a fee interest was condemned because an easement cannot qualify as, quote, all property rights, unquote, in the project property. And then that document also implied that there was compensation, which you can see in your packets as Exhibit E. The amended final order of condemnation on the right in the purple box, the original final order of condemnation filed in the case, which is Exhibit G in your packets, did not contain the relevant legal descriptions. So it was amended to include them as exhibits, which resulted in the amended final order of condemnation. This document continues the ambiguity as to what exactly was acquired. It suggests that a fee interest was to be transferred to CLWA, but the legal map still identified a 40-foot wide easement, actually labeled as permanent easement. And then to further the confusion, the Declaration of Eminent Domain Counsel that was filed by Bradley D. Pierce of McCormick, Kidman, and Barons, submitted in support of the entry of the judgment and the original final order of condemnation, which you can see this as Exhibit F. This unequivocally states that the eminent domain action involved the acquisition of a subterranean easement. None of the other eminent domain documents contain this similar clear statement of that property right that was to be acquired. So So based on all of this, it cannot be said with certainty whether CLWA acquired an easement or a fee interest. Next slide, please. Working with BB&K, it was determined that SCV Water has three options for correction and establishing clear property rights. The first option at the top is that SCV Water can stand on the final order and argue that CLWA did indeed acquire a fee interest. So this is opposite of what CLWA originally sought to acquire through that resolution of necessity and complaint. And the clear declaration of its eminent domain counsel, and then also how the property has actually been used in the past by CLWA and will be used by SCV Water. And SCV Water has not consistently declared its being use of a fee owner. And this also this is also at odds with the fact that we presently seek to acquire only easements for our pipeline project. That's all that we require for our construction and operation. And then this may result in litigation with Woodside and liability. So the second option in the middle is that SCV Water can file a lawsuit to modify the judgment and the final order to unequivocally state whether it has acquired an easement or a fee interest. So because these are a court order document, just a corrective action cannot just be filed and recorded. It cannot be modified without a lawsuit because these are court orders. So this may result in litigation with Woodside and liability based on the significant time that has lapsed and also the modifications. So the third option on the bottom is for SCV Water to stand on the final order and claim that it condemns the fee interest in the project property and grant this fee interest to Woodside in exchange for an easement permitting the continued unaltered operation of the Sand Canyon Pipeline Project. This third option is the recommended option because it quickly clarifies the rights of the parties. It makes Woodside whole in their property interests. It provides easement rights permitting this continued unaltered operation of the pipeline, which is a clarification of existing rights, and it avoids agency liability. So authority should be granted for the agency execution of the proposed agreement settling these real property rights by and between SCV Water and Woodside. This agreement is in your packets as Exhibit H. Woodside is continuing its due diligence, and the legal descriptions that you see in the current agreement may be updated as a result. It only may reduce, not increase, the amount of property for which the fee interest would be granted. We will be using our standardized easement language, which we have worked with BB&K to update and use on all of our current easements. And you can also see that in your agreement in Exhibit 2 of your Exhibit H. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Directors approve agency execution of the agreement settling real property rights and the related temporary construction easement, release, and grant deed conveying the fee interest in the project property to Woodside in exchange for easement rights permitting SCV Water's continued and unaltered operation of the project. And at this time, I'd also like to request that this item be placed on board consent if appropriate. If there are any questions, I have Mr. Guillermo Frias of Best, Best & Krieger also here this evening. And with that, I give this back to you, Chairman Martin.
Thank you, Christina, for the presentation. I don't have any comment cards. Do we have any members of the public online who want to comment?
Liz? Seeing none.
All right. We can open up to discussion. Director Ozahowski, Vice President Ozahowski.
Thank you, Ms. Jacob. A few questions. Why now? Who dropped the ball? And is this an example of copy and paste going wrong in 2006?
Why I can answer the first question. So why now is because the project was brought to our attention because there is a development happening, and through their Woodside's due diligence, they found the discrepancies in the title report, and the title report had the eminent domain action, which had the unclear ownership. So this is an opportunity to be able to clear that title for our interests as well. For the second question, as far as who dropped the ball, I don't really know at this time if that was really determined throughout that process. Mr. Guillermo Frias might be able to answer that question if he was able to determine that. I'm sorry, can you please repeat the third question?
You have three questions there. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'll speak to it as well. I'll speak to questions two and three. When we're going through these, unfortunately, these things happen. The real estate area, the easements, is all a very complicated subject, as you can see by the presentation and the amount of effort involved to come to the conclusion on this, which is why we've hired a right-of-way agent to help us with these positions. We really haven't spent a lot of time to try to figure out the forensic of why this would happen or how this happened, rather than just correcting the action and making note of it moving forward. Even more infrequent than getting easements is condemnation. So this is a condemnation action to acquire an easement, which is something is extremely rare that we do. So it would be very easy for errors to happen in that. But fortunately, we have good staff now and legal representation to help us through that process so it won't happen again.
Understood. Thank you.
And I also want to just add to that as to why now. And the why now is because Woodside is about to purchase the property. They've taken a look at the property. They've done their due diligence. And they realize that there's a strip running right down their property that they may not be able to acquire. They looked at the records. They pointed out to us that there's this ambiguity. And the reason they want this clarified now is because as they move through their development, they want to be able to secure financing for that development and show the potential lender that the loan is going to be secured by the entirety of the parcel. So that's the why now. As an eminent domain attorney who dropped the ball, it's difficult to say. This was in 2006 by a predecessor in interest of the agency. We were unable to find internal records and had to go to the court storage system to pull out the records. There is that ambiguity. There's no way around that. On one hand, we say they took an easement. On the other, they say they took fee. Clearly, the property owner has an interest in having the complete parcel. And we have an interest in seeking to avoid litigation and potential liability over a fee interest that's ambiguous. So this arrangement will allow us to exchange an ambiguous fee interest for certainty of easement, certainty of use that's consistent with its current operation, that's consistent with the way that the agency handles its other pipeline easements, and more importantly, consistent with the policy of always seeking to take as little as possible from property owners through eminent domain. We always ask for easements. Every time I have a discussion about the potential of eminent domain with Christina, she always reminds me, we don't like to do that. We like to be good neighbors. And so there really is no reason not to grant this fee to Woodside, because the reality is that we're not using that property, or the agency's not using that property as a fee owner, nor would it ever do anything else but use it for the current pipeline. And our easement that we would get certainly would permit that continued use and would continue and would actually allow any further development consistent with that use. So if a bigger pipeline needs to be installed, that can be done. If a pump station needs to be put on that easement, that can be done. You will lose nothing, but you will get certainty, and you will avoid potential litigation with Woodside.
No, understood. Thank you, Mr. Frias, and thank you, Mr. Jacob, for the explanations. I was always under the impression that residential property owners have issues with titles and issues with what I call copying case, because that was the case in my purchase. But I'm glad we have a good team and that we're on top of it. Back to you, Chair.
Yeah. Well, 2006, I was the engineering operations manager here with that pipeline project. And let me say this to begin with. I agree with the recommendation. Okay. The situation at that time was that a property owner was delaying acquisition, or for us, acquisition the easement. The pipeline was under construction. It was a two-year process. Many owners, the right-of-way agent and the attorney, David Pierce, that was handling the right-of-way matter, was negotiating with them, trying to come up with a solution that they will sign off on the easement. The situation, as I remember it, was that, okay, we'll take the property in fee. And that's why it's $160,000 sitting in there for an easement. Quote unquote, an easement? No, it's a parcel. So that was appraised, and I'm pretty sure there's an appraisal out there somewhere that says that. But going back, the documents probably didn't get updated as they went through the board and the court at the same time as things get dropped, you know. So with that, I still go with the recommendation to clean it up and take care of Mr. Woodside and his litigation possibilities.
So thank you, Director Peterson. To Christina and Guillermo, I want to thank you both and whomever worked to get through this tangled web of documents that we had to retrieve from the court. Is that correct?
That's right. We had to get it from the storage of the court because we simply couldn't find anything internally. And it is a difficult thing to ask someone to give up fee. There's something visceral about that. So if we're going to make that recommendation, we need to make sure that we have all the documents. Otherwise, it's going to be a tough ask and we would find ourselves in litigation. I just want to make one more comment about the price that was paid for the easement. Oftentimes, an easement of this nature and fee will have almost the same valuation because they leave little rights in residual for the property owner. So we, Christina and I, discussed that. Can we use the sale price as some sort of evidence or to indicate that this was indeed a full fee acquisition? And although there are strong suggestions of that, you know, the issue is it worth it for us to spend more money trying to hold on to something that we may not be able to hold on to? And I think that this owner is going to certainly give us or the agency the rights that those previous owners were reluctant to give us or give the agency because they have that interest. So that I'm not sure we should say drop the ball. It appears to have been a complicated matter, but this is going to ensure that whatever rights the agency got in terms of fee, although not, are still going to continue. It's just not going to be called the fee. You're going to be able to do everything that you're currently doing and everything that you'll ever want to be able to do as a water agency.
So I wanted to add one more. Thank you for that. I just wanted to thank the team for coming up with a solution to this is amenable to both parties and basically accomplishes our purpose fairly painless after all the research work that you've done. I just want to ask Christina, does this is a new easement or the same easement document that's in the record?
So this would be using our current easement document. So it's the one, so we've been working with BB&K, well, Guillermo, to update our easement language. So this would be reducing the fee for our new standardized easement language.
Okay, so it has all the restrictions and access requirements that we normally have.
Yes, right. Exactly.
We would be abandoning the easement as stated in the resolution of necessity, right? It has a description of the easement, and we would be getting an easement with our new language. And not to get too much into the weeds, and this will be the final comment I'll say on the past, what happened in the past. What controls is your resolution of necessity. So if your resolution of necessity says easement, your final order and judgment cannot change that. So if there was to be litigation, the resolution of necessity would be the key document. And that one clearly says easement. So we're going to get rid of that old easement language and get the new and improved easement language that will ensure that you can do anything that you need to do on that property that you've done and will need to do in the future.
Okay. With that, I concur with the recommendation, and I'm okay with putting it on consent, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone will want more information. Some member of the board who's not in this meeting may want more information, but are you okay with consent?
Absolutely okay with consent.
Consent, okay. So consensus of the committee is to move it forward and put it on consent, but be prepared to answer all the questions that may come up from the board.
Yeah, we'll invite Guillermo to the board meeting, and then Christina will be prepared to do the presentation if needed.
Okay. And it's too bad this was item one, because Bill Cooper, who was on the board, may have had something to say, but Ken, I think, provided the on-the-ground experience of them. So thank you all very much. We now can move on to...
Thank you.
Thank
you so much.
Item four, presenter is Rafael Polito, and recommended approval to contract for removal and replacement of one filter media at the Schmidt and the Rio Vista treatment plant. Rafael.
Thank you, President Martin. Good evening, and good evening to the rest of the board. I'm here. My name is Rafael Polito, water treatment manager for the Santa Cruz Valley Water Agency, and I'm here to present for your approval the filter media replacement project that will take place at Rio Vista and Earl Schmidt filtration plants.
Okay.
Thank you. Next slide, please. The Santa Cruz Valley Water Agency operates two surface water treatment plants. The first is the Earl Schmidt filtration plant with a capacity of 56 million gallons a day. And then the Rio Vista water treatment plant with a capacity of 66 million gallons a day. At both of these facilities, we employ a multifaceted approach to water treatment, one of those being filtration. Next slide, please. At the Earl Schmidt filtration plant, we employ 10 filters. And at the Rio Vista water treatment plant, we employ 12 filters. And these filters are, as I mentioned earlier, a part of the multifaceted approach to water treatment, and are responsible for the removal of microorganisms out of the water to ensure that it meets state standards and it is palatable and of high quality for the citizens of Santa Cruz Valley. Next slide, please. The key factors of the filter are the removal of particles, including microbiological contaminants. The filters are of a deep bed monomedia design. They are 72 inches in depth, and they're designed to treat up to 6 million gallons per unit at a rate of 10 gallons per minute per square foot while maintaining an effluent filter quality of less than 0.1 NTU. Next slide, please. As part of our daily and annual monitoring program on the filters, we monitor the filter influent effluents through online instrumentation. We monitor turbidity, head loss, and filter unit run. We also do visual inspections of each filter during the backwash cycle, which is typically about every 72 hours, when the NTUs are less than 2. During a high turbidity event, they get down as low as 10 hours per unit. We also do a annual measurement of the bed, and we employ a grid system where we take six different measurements across the bed and average them out. The primary reason for this is due to breakdown and loss of media. Every filter wash, the media is jumbled around and it slightly degrades. And then there's also some media that is lost during the backwash cycle. The other component of the monitoring program is a filter media assessment, which was last completed August of 2022, for which we hired an outside contractor, ERS, to come in. And what they do is they do a sieve analysis. So they core the filter in multiple locations, and then they run it through several sieves to see how much of the media goes through each section. Based on that, they come up with a effective size and a uniformity of coefficient. The effective size is essentially the sieve measurement at which less than 10% of the media will pass. And the UC is a ratio of the sieve, the dry weight of 60% of the media that passes through a physical sieve divided by the the 10%, the volume that goes through a 10%. Essentially what the UC provides is an indication of uniformity. The lower that number, the more uniform the media is across the entire volume. Another thing that ERS did for us was a gravel profile. So as they do the bed expansion during the backwash, they measure the bed volume depth for the anthracite, and they also measure down to the gravel layer. And then they plot that on a graph for us. Another item that was done is the flock retention profile. What that tells us is how much material is actually retained in the filters during a filter run, and then how much of it is removed during a filter wash. The idea is to remove the majority of it so that when the filter comes back online, it has plenty of space within the crevices to trap further material, but not so clean that the incoming water goes through without being trapped at all. It seems a little counterintuitive, but if a filter is too clean, then it has more trouble trapping material within its bed. The final portion of that is the analysis and evaluation of the backwash air scour. So part of the backwash cycle is to do a high rate air and water scour. And what this allows the process to do is to break up any clumping and any material that might be bound up inside the filter and break it loose so that it may be removed during the following high rate backwash cycle. Next slide, please. The filters at both Rio Vista and Schmidt have an average age of 19 years. The filters at Earl Schmidt were last replaced in 2005 during the expansion and are approximately 18 years old. Rio Vista has seen one major expansion, at which point six additional filters were added. The original filters were put into service in 1995 and have approximately 28 years old. And the new units went into service in 2010 and have approximately 13 years of age. As I mentioned, the assessment that was done by ERS was last conducted in August 2022. I apologize for the typo in the slide. During the analysis, they found the average depth to be 71, where the spec is 72, with a minimum of 65 and a maximum of 75. The effective size had an average of 1.42 millimeter, with a minimum of 1.23 and a maximum of 1.58. Our standard spec is for the effective size to be between 1.4 and 1.6. The uniformity of coefficient averaged at 1.31 with a minimum of 1.21 and a maximum of 1.52. Our current spec calls for less than or equal to 1.5. In their measurements, they also indicated that there were signs of bed disturbance. What they could not clarify for us was the amount or the cause. So a potential cause for bed disturbance could be overwashing, could be a degraded underdrain system, displaced gravel, and could be the issues. And so we're part of the process is to replace the media in one filter at each facility to evaluate the underdrains as well and allow us to better budget for the following years. Next slide, please. This project complies with the strategic plan Nexus, plan B2, which is to plan and budget for long-term replacement improvements. And also for D1.1 to meet all water applicable water quality regulations. Next slide, please. Agency staff reached out to several consultants to acquire quotes. We asked for quotes on the labor, as well as the material, the anthracite replacement itself. Of the three that actually responded, it was ERS, GSC, and PAC Hydro. ERS provided both a quote for the labor and the media. GSC was able to provide us a labor-only quote, as they were not able to secure a vendor in time for the media. PAC Hydro responded and said that they would not bid it, as they just simply didn't have the expertise and would simply be subcontracting it out and would not be able to beat anybody else's price. The cost to remove, replace the media, underlying gravel, and to do a full inspection is $184,770 per filter. And then we're asking for $20,000 in contingency for any repairs that may be done to the underdrain. As I mentioned earlier, we don't expect there to be any damage to the underdrain, but the gravel displacement could be caused by that. And so we'd like to have funds set aside to do that. We're asking for a grand total of $389,540. These funds were previously approved and available in fiscal year 22-23 budget. And the lowest responsible bidder was ERS Industrial Services. Next slide, please. With this, I'd like to ask that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommend that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to enter into contract with ERS Industrial Services for the filter media replacement project in the amount of $389,540. And also, if appropriate, I would like to ask the committee to place it on consent with the board. And with this, I pass it back to Director Martin.
Thank you, Raphael, for the presentation. Excellent. I don't see any public comment cards, Elizabeth. Do we have any members of the public online who wish to comment?
Seeing none.
Very good. We can open up to question and discussion from committee. Committee members, do you have any comments, questions? Or
just a comment. Thank you for the presentation. That included everything that I wanted to know. I agree with putting this on the consent calendar.
Okay. I was thinking about bringing my sample of the media. I still have that. I don't bring it for the board meeting. But anyway, do we still have the samples of the media from the Schmidt?
We have samples from the media during the expansion at Rio Vista in 2010. No. I have not seen the samples from Schmidt.
No.
I have the report from Schmidt as well as Rio Vista.
I have nothing. I think it's a well-done report and research. I recommend to be on consent calendar too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Raphael. And thank you for the thorough presentation explanation of why we're doing this. It looks to me like a very prudent step to take to ensure our treatment process remains efficient. And so I don't have any questions for you other than I agree that we can move it forward and we would put it on consent. Once again, I wouldn't be surprised if you had some questions on this. It's a pretty complicated issue, at least for laymen. But I agree. Let's put it on consent.
Thank you, President Martin and members of the committee.
Very good. So with that, we will move this forward and to the consent calendar. With that, we can move to item 5 on the agenda, presented by Mike Alford, Recommend approval of the replacement of 1,155 meters as part of the AMI meter replacement program. Mike.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks, President Martin. So this is phase two of probably at least up to four phases of our current grant that we applied for. And I'll get into that a little bit in the presentation. If you can pull it up, please. Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
And you can skip that first slide. There we go. So what is AMI? So I gave this presentation to you all, gosh, probably about a year ago for the first phase. And but since Director Peterson wasn't involved, I figured I'd do it again. And I'm sure he's well aware of what AMI is, but AMI is automated metering infrastructure. So instead of having staff walk or drive around in a car, it sends reads directly back to the office through infrastructure, towers, base stations, repeaters, things of that nature. And then the data is collected. And at some point, we're hoping by mid next year, we'll be able to roll out a customer interface that's also part of the grant to allow the customers to view their reads in real time. Next slide, please. So I'm happy to report we have zero manual reads. So the last phase one of this was 5,000 meters, roughly. I think it was 4,900 and change, but roughly 5,000. And it's been completed. The contractor completed it. I think it took a little longer than expected, but it was by early January. So we currently have around 30,000 AMI meters and around 44,000 AMR. AMR is the drive-by. So staff is still driving by and collecting reads. Now, don't get me wrong. When I say there's zero manual reads, that doesn't mean staff doesn't have to go out and get and collect reads. Next slide, please, Liz. So this was a similar picture, but I removed the one of the person walking through the snow, which actually was probably appropriate for what we've experienced the last couple of weeks or so. So the truck obviously is our fleet. The picture on the left is an example of an AMR meter. So it has a transmitter on the meter, and then it goes to a little antenna that's in the box. The picture in the middle is the laptop that the and the little black thing below that is the equipment that the driver uses in their vehicle to collect the reads. And then the two pictures on the right are the antenna that's on top of a tank. I can't remember which tank that one is. I think we have four base stations of now. And then the equipment down below is the collecting equipment and communicates with the antenna and back at the office. So staff still has to go out and collect reads from time to time for a number of reasons. Sometimes it just doesn't transmit and they'll have to go out. Sometimes a customer requests a reread and they have to go out. So there is definitely still some labor involved. Next slide, please. So we applied, and I'm sorry I didn't put the dollar amount in here. I should have. And I guess I should say Cheryl Fowler applied. She's our grant guru. WEEG is the Federal Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Water Energy Grant. And we got a $2 million grant for replacing and converting a little more than 25,000 AMI compatible meters. So the actual replacement is around 20,000, but we also included conversion. So some of the meters that we already had in the ground were AMR meters, but we're going to convert those because of the location that we're putting the base station so they can read. The grant period started July of last year, and we have to be complete with this by the end of June in 2025, which I'm sure we will. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, phase one is the Northbridge, North Park area and various areas around there. So if you're not familiar with that, it's north of Newhall Ranch Road, go up McBean, above Decoro, that general area. And that was the remaining 5,000 walking meter routes that we had, the manual read. The next phase is Tesoro. and there's approximately 1,155 meters to be converted. You know, we probably should have included another area just because it's a process to create an RFP and all that sort of stuff. But we wanted to move as quickly as we can, and we're still working on our propagation studies to find out the best locations to convert that will communicate with existing base stations, as well as where we should be placing additional base stations. And so Tesoro is above the North Park, Northbridge area, and the base station that we're going to be putting up, I think it's going to be on the Seiko tanks, if I'm not mistaken. We'll be able to communicate not only with the ones we just replaced, but also these 1,155 meters. Our staff has converted approximately 200 this year, with about 2,000 remaining, and that's the East Canyon country. Because of a lot of additional maintenance and other work that the staff is doing, we're probably going to go out and do a RFP for this, we think. There's a few other areas. Westridge and Stevenson Ranch will probably be phase three. Newhall will be phase four. And then I think Castaic and Lower Castaic will be another phase as well. We're still working on that. So we've actually, it's been nice. We've created a working group to include staff from customer care department, as well as staff from our technology department. So Chris Perez and his group are attending, as well as the operations staff and Kathleen and her group. So we're all on the same page. So we understand what we're doing. Our GIS group is actually helping out with some of the propagation work as well. Next slide, please. So we only got one bid. And this is the same contractor who was awarded the contract to do the initial 5,000. We think there were 28 people that actually logged into Planet Bids, so we know people were looking at it. We're thinking one of two things. Either this just wasn't enough of an amount for others to want to bid on because it was only 1,155 meters, or they don't have the staff available. We reached out to the one other contractor that bid on the first go round, and we haven't heard back from them as to why they didn't bid this go round. But they were pretty significantly higher than Golden Meter Service on phase one. So it could be that they just felt that they can't compete. But we did review the bid and recommend awarding the contract to Golden Meter Service. They did a really good job. Their staff was very professional. I should also mention that Kathy Martin and her group, they created, I think there were magnets that we put on the side of their vehicles that said they were an approved contractor of SCD Water. They had lanyard badges that they wore. There just really wasn't a lot of negative that any of the staff had feedback regarding this contractor for the first phase. And so we feel really comfortable sticking with them. Next slide, please. The strategic plan nexus, the project supports strategic plan B.2, plan and budget for long-term replacements and improvements. And then more specifically, 2.1.7, conduct meter replacement program. And, you know, this is something that is a gift that'll give forever, right? Meters have a useful life. And so these assets, and as we continue to grow, we're, like I said, I think we're around 74,000 connections now, roughly. They last anywhere from 10 to 20 years. 15 is usually a good point. What we're learning now, though, is there's going to be differences in what's failing on them as to before, because a lot of these now are ultrasonic or magnetic type meters. They're not moving components like we're used to in the past, the positive displacement or multi-jet, where those components tended to fail initially. Now it's going to be more battery, if anything. Next slide. We budgeted funds for this project are included in this current two-year fiscal budget and the meter and meter infrastructure improvements budget. Next slide. And the recommendation is that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to enter into a contract with Golden Meter Service, Inc. in the amount not to exceed $117,000 to replace approximately 1,155 meters as part of the AMI meter replacement program. And if you all agree, we would also like to put this on consent. And now back to you, Chairman Cooper, since I see you entered. If anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
You want me to finish this one?
I did have a question, but Mike, after this bunch, how many more do we have left to do?
So we think, well, so after this one, how many more we have left to do? I think it'll be 20. Oh, I can't remember whatever my slide said before. We think all of them will be converted to AMI as early as 2028. So in this particular grant, we will still have approximately 7,000, about 13,000 to replace over the next 2 years for this particular grant.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. For the benefit of the recording, Chairman Cooper has joined the meeting, and I will turn the rest of the meeting over to Chair Cooper. I do remind that we need to take public comment if there are available.
I'll let you go ahead and finish this.
Finished it, but we got the public comment, but we can talk about it.
Seeing none.
All right. We can continue on our discussion. Chairman Cooper, you're in charge.
Okay. Any questions from the board members?
Yeah, pretty clear picture on how we move forward here. My question is on the semantics here in terms of receiving only one bid here. In the private sector, I got scrutinized for just receiving one bid. It was really frowned upon. But we have received official correspondence from auto bidders saying that they cannot match Golden Meter service. Is that right, Mr. Elwood?
So we haven't heard back why, and I can't remember the name who bid last time. So there were only two bids last time. I don't think there's a lot of companies that actually do this work. We reached out to them to find out why they didn't bid. We did have 28 people log into Planet Bids and review it. So I imagine a good chunk of those are meter contractors, but we just haven't heard back from that one contractor.
Understood. And this was budgeted for this year, is that right?
Yeah.
And what was the amount that was budgeted for this year, for this project?
For the entire fiscal year for AMI replacement, $2.275 million. And we've spent, oh gosh, we're close. We might not hit it. I think we're like at a 1.95 right now. So it all depends on how quickly they do this. And our staff still replaces some. You know, we have target areas that they can replace. They just haven't been able to replace as many as we hope that they would be able to. So we're probably going to have more of these phases that I mentioned in the presentation.
Okay. And believe it or not, I've actually been asked this question. What do we do with our fleet once we don't have AMRs anymore? What happened to those trucks?
Yeah, I think we'll still have staff. As we grow, so they still will have to maintain the meter boxes. They still will have to fix leaks. They still will have to respond to customer calls and inquiries and complaints. There's still a lot of work to be done. Will they be as heavy duty of vehicles as they are now? Probably not. But we'll have to see what happens then.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Peterson.
Thank you, Michael. As always, a good presentation. How much time does it take to replace one of those, put one of those AMRs in there?
Great question. So as short as about 15 minutes and as long as about 2 hours. So it really depends. If everything is fine, there's no mud in the box, there's the angle stop works well, the tailpiece unscrews nice, 15, 20 minutes, boom, in and out. Unfortunately, if there's a stuck angle stop, which happens a lot, if the meter box is full of mud and debris, which happens a lot, it can take up to 2 hours, and depends on the size. The 2 inches, this project is majority 3/4 inch. So we think it'll go fairly quickly. but the larger meters, 2 inches and above, and anything above 2 inch, our staff does. We have our utility operations crew that will place those.
Yeah. In the contract, is the contractor responsible replacing the curb stops or any other?
No. No. So, yeah. So we have assigned a crew member to go with them and to help them. And if they run into any issues that they can't deal with, then we make a work order and our staff goes behind and repairs it or fixes it.
That's good. Thank you.
President Martin.
Mike, thanks for your presentation. Question on the grant. Is there a match on the grant, or do we just draw down the $2 million until it's gone? And
there's a match. It's dollar for dollar. But the whole project, and I should have reviewed this, it's upwards of $6 million, I think. So we're gonna well outspend what we get in grant.
Okay. But the $2 million grant is very important. So we
fantastic. Really, yeah,
appreciate that. So that's all I have. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
I recommend putting it on a consent calendar.
Same.
Very good.
Yep.
Yes, I agree. Let's put that on the consent calendar. Okay, on to item 6, recommendation to adopt a resolution awarding a contract for pump and motor improvements as well as N7 and N8.
And thank you, Chairman Cooper. What I'd like to do is introduce James Sines. He's our newest water system supervisor. In essence, he has replaced Adam Pontius when he retired last year. James, you there? You want to turn on your camera? And James came from Glendale.
Good.
And he was going to give this presentation, but I told him I'd bail him out the first time. So I don't know. Is he on? I can't tell.
We've got a picture of him up. He's muted.
You're muted, James.
I'm mute.
Yeah. Say hello.
There we go.
There you go.
There you go. I think I got it.
So he's going to watch me, and next time he's going to present. Right, James?
That's right.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So you can go to the next slide, Liz. And again, this is just a little bit of historical background. And I had to tout this. We were the first ion exchange PFAS treatment facility in the state of California. And I think that's important to note. The designed and ultimate capacity of this plant, and this is just one of the wells, there's three wells for this treatment plant, is 6,250 gallons a minute. Currently, though, we're only able to reach about 3,200. So that means we can only run this smaller well, well N, that's in the picture, and one of the larger wells, N7 or N8. And the reason for that is pressure. The pumps and motors on these wells were not designed to have a lower pressure than these vessels. I think the operating pressure can exceed, I think it's 160, and I believe our two wells are about 175. So not only are we going to upgrade the motor and pump, which I'll discuss, we're also going to do the VFD on these. Next slide. So well N is probably going to be in need of some work. At some point, it was drilled in 1936 and provides 1,250. The pictures on the right, the top one's N7, the bottom one's N8. Those each were drilled in 2003 and pump 2,500 gallons a minute. And as I mentioned, the pressures are just too high for the treatment system. And so that's where we get our combined permitted 6,250 gallons a minute. Next slide, please. So we're going to improve the pump, motor, and VFD. The picture on the far right is not much to see, but on the top, that's what a VFD is. It's inside there. And really what this will enable us to do is not only be able to maximize the production from these three wells, we'll be able to adjust it so that we can meet the demand more efficiently and easier on low time. So right now, when these wells are on, you're getting whatever that combined is, 2,500 plus the 1,250 from well N, less any pressure losses. So the VFD and modifying the pump and motor will allow us to operate it more efficiently and to maximum capacity. Next slide, please. So we got three estimates, one from Tech Drolix at $323,384.39. Lane was the highest, and Pump Tech was just outbid. Was outbid by Tech Drolix. And so we're going to recommend using Tech Drolix. The variable frequency drive is sole sourced, and the reason for that is because of the equipment that we use. We want to standardize it throughout the entire service area. And so we got an estimate from Royal Industrial Solutions in the amount of $240,774. Next slide, please. The strategic plan nexus for this project, strategic plan B5.1, maintain all facilities and appurtenances in a consistent fashion to achieve operational efficiency and functionality. And D1.1, meet all applicable water quality regulations. What I should also note is we had discussed with engineering when we were in design for this treatment plant to modify and upgrade the pump motor and the VFDs for these wells during that. But because we're fast tracking this plant, we decided to do it after the fact. Next slide, please. We did budget for this fiscal year, and it's currently in our 2-year capital improvement wells and facility improvement budget. However, we're probably going to have to roll over these dollars into next fiscal year because we were told that the lead time for some of the equipment is up to 22 weeks. And so that's why we want to get this ordered sooner than later so then we can get this done. Next slide, please. Recommendation is that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopts the attached resolution awarding contracts for the pump and motor improvements at wells N7 and N8 project to Tech Drolix in the amount of $323,384.39 and to Royal Industrial Solutions for the VFD in the amount of $240,774. And we'd like this as well, if you agree, to be on consent. And back to you, Chairman Cooper. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Or maybe James, too.
I think we lost James, but if you're out there, James, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you for the presentation, Mike, and thanks for the introduction.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. With that, we'll, are there any public comments?
Seeing none.
And director comments. President Martin.
Welcome, James. And yes, I want you to know we don't bite. So next time if Mike turns it over to you, don't be worried. And we're easy to get along with. Thank you, Mike, for the presentation. It seems like a smart thing to do to be able to increase our extraction capacity and do it in an efficient manner. So I support this, and I also would support it going to the consent.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none? Oh, Dr. Peterson.
Just really a quick question. I never heard of Tektronix before. Hydraulics,
Tektronix? Yeah, I haven't either.
So
our age? Yes, no. Yeah, I don't know. I know that there's others that have worked with them and they feel comfortable working with them. So
we've yes, purchased a few pumps and motors from them.
Hey, look at, thank you, James.
I agree.
Director O.
Just a quick question. What happens to the replaced equipment?
That's a great question. I guess it's scrapped. I don't know. That's
1936. It'll be
a museum piece. Do we sell it for scrap, or do we just
do some stuff like all the brass meters that we're taking out? We do scrap that and recycle it. And I know a lot of our pipelines. That's a great question, James. Have you Do you know if we also recycle?
I'm not sure about the pumps, but the motors will get refurbished and reused at other sites. But as far as all the other pieces, I'm not sure.
We'll look into it then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Pretty good. And consent calendar.
Okay. I'm good.
Pretty good. Okay, moving on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, James. Item 7 is to recommend authorizing the general manager to execute a purchase order amendment to Hazen Sawyer for additional engineering services for the new T7, U4, U6 wells PFAS treatment. On and on.
The long one.
Yes. And who is?
Orlando Moreno should be the presenter. He's the project manager for this project.
Hey, everyone. Orlando. All right. Good evening, Chairman Cooper and committee members. My name is Orlando Moreno. I'm a senior engineer and project manager on this project that we'll be discussing tonight. Liz, please, if you could start the slide. All right, we'll start with a brief overview of the project. The project consists of multiple improvement components that will be constructed within the existing Rio Vista intake pump station facility. That's noted here on this slide as RVIPS. The first project component is to construct a new treatment facility to remove PFAS contaminants from our existing T7, U6, and U4 wells. Shown here in blue dots on this slide. And then these wells will be taken offline, have been taken offline and not currently producing groundwater due to a PFOA detection. We're also proposing to treat these wells with a new ion exchange treatment system at the existing RVIPS property to bring these wells back online. The second major component is to remove VOC contaminants from our existing Saugus 1 and 2 wells, shown here in red dots. These two wells are currently active and producing groundwater. However, VOC contaminants, primarily PCE and TCE, have been detected. Perchlorate is also detected at these two wells, which is currently removed by our existing Saugus perchlorate treatment facility at RVIPS. So this project intends to construct a new GAC vessel treatment system that will remove VOC from these two wells. And then finally, our last major component is to replace an existing bulk disinfection facility at RVIPS with a new consolidated disinfection system to improve operation and cost efficiency. The new chloramine facility will consist of a new on-site sodium hypochlorite generation and liquid ammonia sulfite system, which will disinfect waters from T7, U6, U4, Saugus 1 and 2, and then also a nearby Q2 well, all at a centralized location within the property. Next slide, please, Liz. All right, this slide provides a rendering of the Rio Vista intake pump station facility and the proposed improvements in color. The TMU well's PFAS treatment is located on the southeast corner of the property shown here in blue. The Saugus 1 and 2 VOC treatment is shown in green here next to the main pump station building. And then the disinfection facilities to be located there at the northwest corner of the site in yellow. And one of the items to note on this image is that the property is mostly built out with very limited space for new improvements. Next slide, please. Okay, so this image shows an original design layout for the new disinfection facility as designed by our engineering consultant, Hazen and Sawyer, in their latest 75% design plans. This disinfection system was designed to be housed in separate structures because of the limited space that we had here at this property, and also to maintain disinfection to Saugus 1 and 2 and the nearby Q2 wells while the new facility was being constructed. So as you can see here, we have the hypochlorite generation system in one building, while the LAS tanks and feeder pumps are located in separate covered shed structures. The original design also intended to provide a temporary chemical storage area, to be used while the new disinfection facility was being built out. So that's shown here in blue on this exhibit. Next slide, please. Okay, so during our 75% plan review, staff determined that the existing disinfection facility could potentially be taken offline during construction, and the temporary chemical storage site could be omitted. This could be achieved by rerouting Saugus 1 and 2 treated water to the Regal plant, and then also providing a manual tablet feeder to AQ2 for further disinfection, all while the new facility is being constructed. So this provides us the ability to reconfigure the site in a much more efficient manner. So staff requested that an alternate building design be considered to consolidate all the disinfection systems under one single fully enclosed building, as shown here in yellow. This results in an expanded open area that allows for improved vehicular circulation within the property. Additionally, a new storm rain system was added to the project scope to provide a discharge point of connection for the existing Saugus perchloric treatment system there on site. Next slide, please. Hazen and Sawyer submitted change order number one in the amount of $127,608 to prepare revised building plans and include an on-site storm drainage design. The changes will add a significant benefit to the project by consolidating the disinfection system into one contained building, creates open space for better vehicular access, and improves site drainage at the site. This proposed work aligns with our strategic plan objective D2, which states that we will proactively install, operate, and maintain groundwater treatment infrastructure to avoid impacts on water supply reliability. Next slide, please. Okay, so for a quick budget overview, we included a table here that provides a cost breakdown of the additional funds needed to complete the revised design. Hazen and Sawyer's original design contract was authorized for an amount of $898,833. Our current purchasing policy allows the general manager to authorize up to 10% for a change order request. In this case, it's $89,883. We're also requesting that the board authorize an additional $37,735 to cover the remaining amount of the change order. In addition to that, we are requesting $25,000 in design contingency allowance for any minor design revisions that may come up as we complete final design, given the complexity of this project. So the total amount of funds that we're requesting at this point is $62,725. We've allocated $1.4 million in our 22-23 fiscal year CIP budget for design expenses. And as shown in this table, our total anticipated engineering design expenditures are estimated to be just over $1 million, putting us just below our CIP budget cap for 22-23. For the TNU wells and disinfection facility portion of the project, staff is currently working with the State Water Resources Control Board to obtain grant funding as part of the Emerging Contaminants Program and LARC Consolidation Incentive Funds. That's a big group effort here with a lot of folks working on that portion of the work to get us some additional funding. And then we're also, we can also pursue a zero to low interest loan from the State Revolving Fund as needed for this project. One thing to note, the Saugus 1 and 2 VOC treatment is the subject of the agency's pending contamination claim against the Whitaker Corporation. Staff has and will continue to track all costs related to the VOC treatment separately as we work through that final ruling. Next slide, please. Okay, quickly on schedule, with your recommendation tonight and board approval next month, we anticipate completing final design by the end of this upcoming August, advertising the project for public bidding in September, and then we aim to start construction in February of next year, and with the goal of completing the project by May of 2025. Next slide, please. All right, to conclude, we request that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to execute a purchase order amendment to Hazen and Sawyer in the not to exceed amount of $62,725 for additional engineering services for the proposed T&U Wells PFAS groundwater treatment improvement project, Saugus 1 and 2 BOC groundwater treatment improvements, and a new disinfection facility to be located at the Rio Vista intake pump station facility. This project is exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA guidelines section 15301. Since the project will not expand the existing facilities, nor will it increase water extraction. Also, if we could, I'd like to request that this item be placed on consent if the committee deems it appropriate. With that, I thank you for your time, and then I'll hand it over to Chairman Cooper. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Chairman Cooper, can I add one item on there?
Please.
Just what Orlando mentioned regarding the funding that did go through the Finance and Administration Committee on Monday of this week, and we advanced it to next Tuesday's board meeting on the consent calendar. So the funding arrangement that he discussed in his slide is moving forward to the board next.
So what do we have to do then if that's going to the board?
That's going as a resolution to apply for the state grant. So
okay,
we need the resolution as part of it, but just letting you know that we are progressing with that, that because it's a financing item, it went to the F&A committee. We originally had it at this committee, but determined that it was more appropriate to be there.
And this may be refundable with the Whitaker Burmite?
Portions of it, yes.
Portions of it anyway. Yeah. And it's only 16. Please, any questions from the public?
Seeing none.
Very good. Questions and directives? President Martin.
Thank you, Orlando. Just one question. Thank you for the lengthy explanation and the staff report and also the your presentation. But is it safe to say this can be just categorized as a change in scope recommended or requested by the agency as opposed to anything Hazen and Sawyer did on their own?
That's correct. Yes, it's an agency-driven decision to make this change. It's going to help clear out a little more space there at that site. It's very, very tight.
Very tight. I just want to make sure that the rest of the board is aware that this is providing additional services beyond what the original scope included. So.
Yes.
Thank you. I agree. Move it forward.
Yeah. Vice President Marzoff.
Mr. Moreno, can you expand on the drainage deficiencies issue?
Sure. Yeah. Currently, there is no discharge location for the Saugus perchlorate treatment vessels. And so we want to take the opportunity now as part of this project, since we're going to be digging up a lot of that area to install additional piping to make sure we have a point of connection for those vessels. So that's really what we're doing as part of this change order.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Director Peterson.
A couple of things. And this is on Monday night, we had the Finance Committee meeting and we saw an introduction to the project. First time I've seen it, actually. Interesting, quite interesting to put all that facility on that site. And the storm drain that was never put in, I understand, because of that there's a permitting problem that has a permitting issue that has to occur to accomplish that. Has that been kind of like scoped out how to do that?
Yeah, the idea on that is we've already received clearance from our environmental consultant that there's no impact to any NPDES or discharge permit. I believe that's what you're referring to, Mr. Director Peterson. So long as we don't discharge more than what the existing storm drainage is discharging into that river, we will be okay. So the way we're designing this system is we're throttling the water by connecting to two storm drain systems out there. There's two existing storm drain lines. And so we're going to avoid reaching capacity in those storm drain lines that are going into the river, and that's how we're avoiding this environmental issue.
Okay. The other thing I noticed reviewing the documents, and it came to me is that there was a diesel tank sitting in the middle of that facility. Is that still there?
I don't believe so. Maybe Mike and Raphael that are online can probably answer that question.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any diesel tank.
It could have been removed. But
yeah, I believe there's a concrete pad out there, and it might have been sitting there.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is that I remember there's an expansion plan for that plant maybe in the future. And that area where you're putting the vessels is the area where the generator is supposed to go, I think. The new generator for the expansion. Have you looked into that, or are we just going to write that off now since we have this other facility that we're talking about?
That's a very good question, Director Peterson. I was not aware that we were going to put a generator at that site.
Orlando Jason has his hand up and could probably answer that question.
Okay.
Oh, hello. Good evening, everybody. Yeah, as you may recall, when we expanded the Rio Vista treatment plant back in about 2011, 2010 timeframe, we basically at that time, we also took that underground storage tank, the diesel one, that supplies the fuel for the generators, to an above ground storage tank. So that's the that 8,000 gallon AST that's located on the facility now. So it's no longer underground, it's above ground. And then also too, at the time we added a generator as well, as far as the expansion portion of it too. So just wanted to give some clarification, some history there.
So the generator is sized for an expansion then? Is that what
it is? It's sized for when we expanded it to 66 MGD. It accounts for that larger pump in there. And it's and at the time it was discussed where, you know, the needs for any other future expansion could be mitigated through conservation efforts and so on. So currently it's it provides for that 66 MGD.
Okay. All right. And one last history question. Is the 16-inch pipeline that's contemplating to bring water back to the plant from the wells in seven, whatever, is it being used presently? It was a discharge pipe out of the Saugus perchlorate treatment plant.
Yeah, it is not. I think right now it's not being utilized. And so we want to use that as part of our transmission pipeline to get it back into our RVIPS.
Well, offline, I can tell you a history about that line, but I don't want to talk about it now.
Yeah, no, I'd be interested in that.
But it's a good pipe, right?
That's a good pipe.
Okay, that's what we need. Vice President Herzog.
Just a quick question, and I know I've asked this before. You know, that area has a lot of food traffic around it, and unfortunately, in the past 2-3 years, there's some loitering, especially around the entrance to that facility. From the moment this site was built and commissioned to today, has there been any trespassing issues on that property that we know of?
Yeah, I'll let maybe Raphael or Mike respond to that one if you guys don't mind.
No, I'm not aware of any. It's pretty, has pretty robust fencing around it.
Okay. And are there plans to install CCTV cameras on that site?
Yes, I believe they have them there already. So we're going to relocate them based off.
We do have them on site, Orlando. Yeah.
All right. Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Very good. Anything else? You know, Ms. Peterson, I said you had another one.
Good. I was going to say, I recommend it be on consent count.
Please. Same.
The write-up for it, if you could make it, I don't want to say a little less technical, but make it clear that this is the agency's request for additional services by Hayes and Sawyer. And so we clarify that so we don't have to answer those questions.
Absolutely, we'll do that.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Orlando.
Thank you. Have a wonderful night.
Okay, we'll move on to item 8. Recommend approval of adopting a resolution for a construction contract with J. Vega Engineering Incorporated, a purchase order to Philippine Engineering for construction management and inspection services for the Dickinson Waterline Improvements Projects. That will go on to who has this one?
Yogonathan Thirumaran. You know him, we know him as Marin, is the project manager for this project and will do the presentation.
Very good. Welcome, Marin.
Thank you. Thank you, Kurt. Good evening, Chairman Cooper, members of the committee, and members of the public. I'm Yogonathan Thirumaran, and as Kurt said, I go by Marin, and I'm the project manager for the Dickinson Drive Waterline Improvements Project. We have an item in front of you this evening to recommend approval of adopting a resolution for a construction contract authorizing a purchase order for construction management and inspection services and find a contract agreement that is exempt from CEQA for this project. Next slide, please. So this project, the replacement project is located in the northern part of the city, just north of New Hall Ranch Road between Smythe Drive and Decorah Drive next to Valencia High School. Next slide, please. We're basically replacing approximately 2,100 feet of 14-inch PVC pipe with 16-inch ductile iron pipe. There have been a few leaks near this section in the recent years, which were repaired through the agency's emergency contracts. And it does get expensive, costing a lot of money to fix the leaks, especially for repairing the asphalt, and also causes disruption to service due to the nature of emergency projects. This replacement project would certainly alleviate the waterline breaking issue and also the disruption to the service issues in this area. This work requires city encroachment permit to perform the work, which actually requires the work to be done during nighttime. So this work, all this work will be done during nighttime. This work will also be coordinated with Valencia High School and Legacy Christian Academy, so they are fully aware of the project and we can also accommodate their needs as well. I also want to mention that our agency engineering inspection group will be working in conjunction with Philippine Engineering to perform the construction inspection. The consultant will be paid on a time and material basis, so using our inspection for certain tasks would help us save some money. Right now, our inspection is very busy and wouldn't be able to accommodate a full-time inspection on this project. So we'll be using them per their availability. As you also see here on the slide, this project also satisfies our strategic plan objective B2.1. Next slide, please. The construction bidding for this project basically followed our standard agency bidding process. The project was advertised from late November through February of this year. In addition, the project was also advertised in the local newspaper, The Signal, on 3 different dates, as you see here. Bids were electronically opened at 2 p.m. on February 1st. And as shown here on this table, we received bids from 2 contractors, not too far apart, between 1.9 million and 2.3 million. The lowest bid from J. Vega Engineering seems to meet all the requirements per the contract documents, and their bid is also very close to the engineer's estimate. at least from my knowledge, I think we haven't done any work with them yet. So this would be the first project for the agency and JVEGA to work together. However, I also want to mention that they are a licensed Class A contractor and DIR registered. They have fully completed the bid form and have been determined as the lowest responsible bidder. Next slide, please. This slide here shows the consultant selection process for the construction management and inspection services. This is no different than our standard approach in selecting a consultant. We followed our standard process of obtaining proposals from our on-call consultants. We received two proposals from Philippine and MWH. As we always do, staff from engineering and from operations did the evaluation based on the criteria listed here, which also includes the availability of the consultant as well. Philippine Engineering was selected after our evaluation meeting last year. I also want to point out that we used a QBS qualifications-based selection procurement process to select this consultant, which is this agency standard approach for selecting consultant for these types of services. Next slide, please. This slide here shows you a brief project schedule. Today, on March 2nd, we are here this evening presenting this project in front of the committee, and we are planning to take this project to the board on March 21st to help with the construction bid price due to the current bidding environment and avoid possible price escalation. The board approves, we'll be issuing the NTP around in April. With 6 months of construction, we expect the project to be completed in October this year. Next slide, please. Finally, staff recommends that the engineering and operations committee recommend that the board of directors adopt the attached resolution for a construction contract with JVEGA Engineering in an amount not to exceed $1,909,510.50. Authorize the general manager to execute a work authorization with Philippine Engineering for an amount not to exceed $300,000 for construction, management, and inspection services for the Dickerson Drive Waterline Improvements Project. And find the contract agreement exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA guidelines, section 15282, which is the installation of maintenance, repair, restoration, removal, or demolition of an existing pipeline that does not exceed 1 mile in length, and alternatively, exempt from CEQA under CEQA guidelines, section 15302, which is replacement or reconstruction of existing utility systems and facilities involving negligible or no expansion of capacity. This concludes my presentation, and if appropriate, I would like to request the committee for this item to be placed on the consent calendar for the March 21st board meeting. Thank you, and with that, I'll bring it back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Very good. Thank you, Maran. Are there any outside comments?
Seeing none.
Director comments. Vice President Ho.
Thank you, Maran. Philippine Engineering, as an inspection company, have they done services for us before?
Yes. Yeah, I think our inspection has been working with them on several development projects, correct? Yes.
Thank you. Back to you, Chair.
President Martin.
Thank you for the presentation, Maran. I have a question about I certainly support getting rid of the PVC before it blows up again. How much did we replace in front of the high school the last time this happened? When we just did the repair.
Yeah, I think it was only a stick of ductile iron, so 20 feet or 18 feet. No, 20 feet is what ductile is, AC's.
Okay.
Yeah,
18. I appreciate that the schedule is going to include most of the summer months and just a little bit from the school schedule on either end, but what provisions are we making so that the school can continue to operate during the construction?
So this all this work is going to be during nighttime. And
so we will be plating the roadway. We will do traffic control through the night, and then we will have the roadway and access to the school reopened by before school start.
Okay.
Before drop-off.
And they won't have interrupted water supply during their school hour.
And they won't have interrupted water supply during their school.
No, yes. Thank you, Corey. Yes. And we'll be coordinating with the school as well. And we'll definitely be accommodating their schedule. And yeah, there won't be any disruption.
Okay, thank you. I support moving it forward. It might be a little bit too much money to put on consent.
Questions, Ken?
Yeah, there have been other breaks on the pipeline other than the latest one just last year or whatever it was. It was actually when I was the manager at Valencia, we had a good one that replaced a number of feet of pipeline. But except for that, this is going to be a complete whole pipeline from connection to connection. Is that correct? You're not going after the old pieces?
Yes, that's correct.
You know, I recommend the action, but I think probably just right reading that going to help to.
You know, it's one that has caused enough concern on the board, the PBC, that maybe this is could be a quick one at the board meeting.
Sure. Very good. What is it tying into at the Coro, Aaron?
PVC.
PVC.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mike. PVC.
It's a PVC T.
PVC. Oh, one.
PVC.
All right.
Thank you. We'll get there.
To be continued.
We'll get there eventually.
Very good. Thank you, Maureen. Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 10. A discussion of staffing considerations.
Thank you very much, Chair Cooper. Mike Alvord and myself are going to tag team this presentation as Liz pulls it up here. We both have a few positions for consideration. This is not requiring an action by the committee. Position control will go through the Finance and Administration Committee, and then we'll come back to the full board as a presentation for approval on the same time that we're doing our budget. But we wanted to bring this to the E&O first for consideration, because you are most familiar with the projects and the work we are doing on those projects. So next slide, please, Liz. Starting with engineering, this is our current org chart and configuration. We have a capital improvement group, a development group, an inspection group, and then I've recently created an administration group underneath Liz Adler to manage our administrations and be able to cross-train and have some coverage of different areas that we have there. So just wanted to give you an overview of the department before we break it down into sections on where we need the additional support. Next slide, please. So for the new inspector position, we're asking for this position to be in this fiscal year. The agency approximately 3 years ago had 5 inspectors plus a supervisor. When there was a vacancy in the inspection department, we decided to leave the group with 4 inspectors and reclassify one of the positions to a right-of-way agent. For obvious reasons, it's good to have a right-of-way agent for the complex easement issues we have. For the past 2 years, the department has been managing with only 4 inspectors and been filling the void with consultants. Replacing the missing inspection position will allow the agency to use in-house inspection for some of our CIP projects, especially pipeline replacement projects. Using consultant inspection on these projects typically costs between $300,000 to $400,000 for a 6 month job, as we just demonstrated on the last project, was a $300,000 inspection services. The new position will be approximately $160,000 annually. This is not the fully burden rate. The fully burden rate is approximately 40% higher than that, as a 40% additional. So still close to approximately $250,000, still saving a significant amount of money when you're multiple projects that they can do. The position will be 70% billable to either CIP or development projects and would be in underneath Josh Gillum in the inspection department. Next slide, please. This is an additional engineer that we are looking for in the development services position. This is really a level of service decision, and we are looking at implementing this potentially in the fiscal year 24-25. Currently, our plan review and study review turnaround goal is 4 to 6 weeks for our development services group, and the current reality is we're closer to 8 weeks or more due to the complexity of the projects and the volume of projects we have coming in. Even with the observed slowdown in the current development, a lot of times the development community during this time will shift to planning and or commercial projects. So we don't necessarily see the same slowdown in our workload as you would see slowdown in construction. That being said, because we do recognize and acknowledge that there is a slowdown, we are looking to wait and push this to the next fiscal year to evaluate during this fiscal year and then reconsider. Would like to point out, we currently have about $150 million in projects in the development services group that are managed by the staff you see here. And we have an additional $100 million that we are aware of in planning for new reservoir and pump station projects over the next 10 years. So there is still a significant amount of growth happening in this valley or proposed to happen in this valley. Again, we will continue to evaluate this position this year and will not fill this position next year if we feel the level of service is able to be met with the existing staff. And this position is also anticipated to be 70% billable to the development. With that, I will pass it on to Mike and the next slide.
So you're not looking for approval for this position. You're just saying you may do this later.
We are letting you know the position control for the next 2 years. And okay. So, yes, we are looking for a tentative approval on this, but we will come back and evaluate in the next fiscal year.
Got it.
Thanks, Courtney. So this beast that you see in front of us, we like to refer to as TDOMs, Treatment Distribution Operations and Maintenance Section. We have quite a few different departments within TDOMs. We have the Water Systems Group, which that's, you met James a little while ago. We have two supervisors in Water Systems, and they're responsible for all of our O&M of our wells, pump stations, tanks, water quality sampling, pump and meter reads, disinfection facility maintenance, all of that stuff. As Adam Pontius used to like to say, anything within a fence. Then we have our utility operations group, which we also have two supervisors, and that's Josh Jenkins and Roger Hitchin. And they're responsible for all of the day-to-day operations, mostly underground stuff, right? The leaks, replacing pipelines, maintenance of our valves, our air vacs, our hydraulic control valves, blow-offs, all of that sort of stuff. And needless to say that they spend majority of their time fixing leaks. The field service section, Gino Garcia just recently retired. I think he had like 35 years or something. So it was a bit sad to see him go, but good for him. And we're going to actually start interviewing Monday for his replacement. They're responsible for all the meter and service stuff. So anything within a meter box, they'll fix. So if there's a leak in a meter box, they'll fix that. If there is a meter to be replaced, fuel customer service. They do exercise some of the system, maintain hydrants and valves and things, but at a lesser extent of the other group. We have our treatment plant, which that's far on the far left, and that you met Rafael Polito, who's our water treatment manager. And they're responsible for primarily the two intake pump stations and the two surface water treatment plants. So we changed things a little bit when we merged. That group was responsible for the Sand Canyon pump station prior to the merge, but that's handled now by Ryan and James group, primarily because it's a distribution system item, right? We have the transmission pipeline and then it gets into the system. And so they maintain that now. And then on the far right, you can kind of see they listed Ryan twice in our organizational chart because of the water quality aspect of it. So he does some of the maintenance stuff, but also mostly the water quality. And then we have our laboratory with Jeff Kay as our water quality laboratory manager. And he has four water quality scientists. And then last but not least, our safety department with Rebecca Lustig, Joe Diaz, and Aaron Souther. So that is TDOMS. Next slide, please. We're asking for two positions this fiscal year and two positions next fiscal year. So prior to Gil moving over, Gil Homrocio moving over to the water treatment plant group, Raphael had, I think it was 20 direct reports, which was way too much for someone who's trying to manage all the ins and outs of the two treatment plants and intake pump stations. And so there was a vacancy. We had two supervisors prior to that. And so Gil applied and interviewed and got it. And but Raphael still reports, has all the treatment plant operators reporting directly to him. And what we're looking to do is to create a treatment plant operator supervisor. So that would then reduce Raphael's direct reports to three. He'd have his administrative tech, Jessica, and then he'd have two supervisors, a water system supervisor and a treatment plant operator supervisor. We just think it's important for a number of reasons. One, we noticed some stress on the team during these last two rain events, the one in September, where we had some significant turbidity issues. And then fortunately, the most recent ones, we were able to control a little bit better because the demands were so low. But we did shut down the plant several times because demands were so low, and we needed to because the turbidities were so high. So it just worked out. We also, you know, Raphael's closer to retirement than he is to stay longer. So it would be nice to have another person that has some supervisory experience and allows Raphael then to focus more on some of the treatment plan improvements as he presented earlier, the filters. We're going to probably, based on what happens with these two, we're going to probably have to replace more media and just really focus more on the operational aspects of the two treatment plants instead of the day-to-day, day-to-day stuff. Next slide, please. Oh, and that salary range, 35, that is what our supervisors currently have. So that's what the water system supervisors, utility supervisors, and field service supervisors. So we have the former CLWA, I guess, looked at this before, but never pulled the trigger on it. So we probably will have to, well, we're going to have to recruit it and create a robust job description. But we assume that that's a sufficient range for this position. Sorry, Liz, next slide. The other position is in the water systems technician group. And this is going to be reporting to James Sines. So on the left, you see Ryan's group. And again, they do most of the water quality sampling, disinfection facility, O&M, and getting the reads at our booster stations, wells, and such. James' group does more of the day-to-day maintenance and does some capital improvements. We actually have a crane, and we have staff that can pull a pump and motor and do some well rehab work. And they want to expand that, and they're looking to even out the number of people underneath the seniors in this group. And so that's what we're looking to add this fiscal year under this coming fiscal year under this group. And it's in the salary range is 25 to 28. So my guess is we would hire an entry level, but you never know. We've had some really good candidates coming from the outside. James was one of them coming from Glendale. So if we do have somebody with more experience and we can bring them in as a two, we would do that if needed. Next slide. The other two for the next fiscal year, not this coming one, but fiscal year 25. For those of you who attended the presentation that we gave and the tour that we gave several months ago, I think my key word was maintenance, and we're just not meeting the metrics that we should be meeting. Mm-hmm. And we don't have really aggressive metrics. We have about 25,000 system valves, and we're only saying that we're going to exercise 20% every year. So it's not like we're trying to exercise every single valve every single year. We think 20% is a reasonable amount. But as I mentioned before, we average about 1.3 leaks per workday. So the staff spends a lot of time fixing leaks. And then we're also, we're doing some capital work. We do generally 1 to 2 pipeline replacements internally per year. We would have loved to do the decoral pipeline job. We just don't have the resources or the time to do it. So that's why Marin and the engineering group took over that that job. Next slide. And this one we're putting, it's similar to what Courtney said about engineering. We think we're going to need it. We just don't know exactly when. There's some new laboratory requirements, TNI, the NELAC Institute, and NELAC stands for, oh my gosh, National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Conference. And that group put out a lot of requirements recently for laboratory managers and laboratories, water quality laboratories, that they have to comply with in order to stay accredited under the ELAP program, the Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program. And as part of that, Jeff Kay says we do need to add a QAQC supervisor to this group. What he doesn't know is exactly when. We just had a recent audit. And based on the recommendations from that audit, which we should probably get within a month or two, it'll really kind of fine tune and tell us exactly what we're lacking based on these new water quality laboratory requirements. And we don't have a job description, and we haven't done any sort of research to see what other laboratories are doing. But we figured that the salary range of 36, which is actually one above the supervisors on the operations side, primarily to separate from the other, so there's proper separation between the senior water quality scientists and the other water quality scientists. But, you know, it will allow us to maintain compliance with advanced drinking water regulations. We're also looking to potentially add another PFAS instrumentation. Where Jeff is in the middle of getting accredited for a different method that EPA and Division of Drinking Water is requiring. The current method that he could do is 537, which looks at 18 PFAS chemicals. And he's trying to get accredited for 533, which looks at 28, which is required as part of the upcoming unregulated contaminant monitoring rule sampling. So some of those samples will have to be outsourced until he gets his accreditation. And I think that's it. Next slide. That is it. So back to you, Chairman Cooper, and I'm sure Courtney and I would be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions from outside?
None.
The committee. It's a lot of information there.
I'll just say, I know Courtney's group has been really busy, and I assume, Mike, your department's really busy as well. I think it's important to look forward and do the proactive planning like we're doing. And so it's hard to disagree with anything you said. I appreciate the presentation and all the detail that you put behind it. And I think you'll have board support to do it. And when the time comes, when it comes back to us, I think we'll support it, yes.
Thank you.
Vice President Oak.
for the treatment plant operator supervisor, would that be open to internal staff?
Yeah, we've just started talking about it. We think we're going to open it up to both internal and external. Definitely internal, but we think we want to look external as well, just to see what's out there.
Got it. And then for the QAQC supervisor, we won't know what Jeff needs until the audit is available in report form, right?
Correct.
And do we get a presentation of that audit?
Yeah, that would be interesting, I think. I'd find it interesting.
I find it fascinating.
Yeah. He just finished it. I think it was February 13th and 14th or something like that. I think it was that week. And he says it went really well. But yeah, I'll ask him to give a presentation and then discuss a little more detail the QAQC position.
Okay. Aside from general information, and presenting this to us, what exactly are you expecting from us?
Nothing at this time. We're just general information so the committee understands what the engineering and operations group are looking to in their planning for staffing prior to it coming to the full board.
I appreciate the information. I think I'm going to get to see this again in another committee. But I'm sure it'll be done as well again. No, I appreciate the information. It is a tough situation as you get into an organization now with 5 years. You have to understand what has to be accomplished and what resources we have available to you to accomplish those things. And I can see these readjustments, as it's called, continuing years to come.
For sure. Thank you, thanks.
Sorry, one more thing, Chair. Mr. Allward, could I get a copy of that larger PDOM org chart? We do have individual one based on like sub departments, but I really like the TDOM's full spreadsheet PDF.
Yeah, and what I'll do, if you'd like, is I can write a little sort of description of each sub department within the entire section.
That would be great. Thank you.
Yep.
Back to you, Chair.
Hey, Mike, with the new treatment operations supervisor, I imagine that'll be a grade 5 position, but will the position above that then still need to be a grade 5, or will that be more of a managerial position and not in the chain of decision-making?
Yeah, so that's a great question. In from regulatory standpoint, it would not be required. You're only required to have one chief operator. Rafael has it, so it won't be necessary. But I think it'll also open it up for us in the future when he finally does retire at some point to maybe do something different. You know, we don't necessarily have to have a T5 replace Rafael's position.
Yes, I think that's handy having it that way.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, very good. Item 10, real property activity report.
Hello again. Good evening, Chairman Cooper and committee members.
Good evening.
So my name is Christina Jacob, right-of-way agent here at SPV Water. As part of the board policy update that was brought to this committee and then approved by the board last year, this is the semi-annual report of real property transactions to the engineering and operations committee. Thank you, Liz, for bringing the PowerPoint up. So anytime pipelines are within privately owned property outside of the public right-of-way, we'll need to have access to build and maintain those pipelines. Because of this, we need the easements, and those that have been granted to us since our last update are on this site. And I just like to note here that these are using that updated easement language that we've been working with BB&K to update with all of that updated language. So since our last update, we have received easements on other publicly owned properties, such as Castaic High School, College of the Canyons, and on city-owned property for the Needham Ranch Pressure Reducing Station. In addition, we have received pipeline easements for the Mission Village, Tesoro Phase 1, and Skyline Ranch developments. Pictured here is the College of the Canyons easement. The outline in green is the easement that we acquired, and the boundary in red was the existing easement that we no longer needed and quit claimed, which brings me to the next slide of property interests. So we have other property interests, which includes the quit claims. In addition to College of the Canyons, we quit claimed a temporary pipeline with the Mission Village development. The original easement identified that the quit claim was to be done as a separate document. So we were able to satisfy that requirement. We also have license agreements and also a lease agreement in there. Action Family Counseling exercised their option to extend their license an additional year per their agreement. This agreement will end in September of this year. In addition, the Central Park Fourth Amendment and the licenses for trails and the staircase were signed. From time to time, private homeowners request to access our property. And if it does not interfere with agency operations, and if it's a short duration, we're agreeable to be able to allow access in the pursuit to be good neighbors. So this concludes this semi-annual presentation. And I'm available if there are any questions. Otherwise, I give this back to you, Chairman Cooper.
Thank you. Are there any outside questions?
Seeing none.
So, Ms. Jacobs, so this will be an annual report given to this committee?
It's a semi-annual, so every 6 months.
Okay, got it.
Ish.
I'm glad that the College of Canyons, you got that taken care of.
Yes.
5 years ago, we were dealing with that.
I was going to ask you about the College of the Canyon one. They're getting ready to build a new building, a dormitory, out there on that end by the, at least they've got the funding for it already, $67 million. And I thought it was going right where we're showing the easement.
We haven't received any plans, or we haven't seen any plans yet. So that's something that we'll have to confirm. Thank you.
Yeah, we will reach out to them and verify that information and see where they propose to put that. It would involve a pipeline relocation. We will say, notoriously, schools forget to talk to the water agency until much later in their design. And so information like that is always valuable to us. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yes. I think it was going to be adjacent to the new parking structure. So it's either going to be to the west or to the south of it. But I thought it was to the west of it. Yeah. It's going to be a 100-room dormitory.
The pipeline was interesting. That was moved because of the parking structure to begin with. There'll be another time to move it.
Just thank Christina. I'm just glad we have you to take care of all these right-of-way issues, land issues, somebody that can focus on this.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, there's a lot to take care of, so it's great.
Christina, what agency did you come from?
I came from the city of Santa Clarita.
Wow. From the city. Okay, that's where I was. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 11, monthly operations and production report.
Thank you, Chair Cooper. The report is fairly thin now. shows the production data for the month of January. So not a lot of data there, just 1 month. I will point out that due to the rains and the increased potentials for surface water, we and operations working in conjunction with Water Resources Group have move to increase our use of surface water to the extent we can. It's always hard to do that a lot right in the middle of the winter when it's super wet and the demand's real low, but we are trying to head them out that way. And I would point out that the one table in here that shows water levels or soil precipitation, you'll note that in December we had over 10 inches of rainfall. And January, which doesn't show up on here yet, pegs in at right around 9 inches. So very good water year locally so far and elsewhere.
In February, the one day, we had over 7 inches. So, we're doing well.
Fantastic. That's really all I have to report on that.
But any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Any questions from the committee for? Okay. Good. Thank you. Item 12, capital improvement projects construction status sheet.
Thank you very much, Chair Cooper. In your packet, page 197 is our capital improvement project schedule and where we're at with those various projects. There's quite a few projects going on, and we have quite a few more we're trying to kick off. So, and if they have any questions, I'll entertain them.
All right. No questions from the public?
Seeing none.
Nothing from the committee? Nothing. So we've got a bunch of them there at 98%, 99%. They'll probably all fall off of here pretty quick.
We'll replace them.
Right. Yes, there's a bunch coming up. item 13, committee planning calendar. It's getting smaller and smaller to read, that's for sure.
You know, we've been working with this calendar. I really appreciate all the effort that Liz puts in to keep our group organized. We have meetings on a regular basis. We actually meet before regular board meeting agenda planning and do our own agenda planning, trying to balance out the project loads as much as possible, trying to target between 4 and 6 items per meeting. That's not always possible. Some things get a little bit delayed, or sometimes we have stuff, especially operations items are very hard to predict. They usually come up a little faster than an engineering item where we're planning it out for years in advance. But we have been doing pretty good, I think, about balancing these out. And then we're trying to keep our presentations concise with all the information. So always happy to take more input but from the committee on how you would like those presentations to go. But I think we are balancing out our workload and have scheduled between 4 and 6 agenda items moving here until the end of this fiscal year.
Yes, I think that's seems to be about the right amount that we can absorb. It's very good. By the way, I didn't get to ask, maybe Mike's still on there. Turbidity is coming from Cascade with all the big rains last week. Have the treatment plants experienced some real problems this week?
Yes. I don't recall what the numbers were, but we did have to shut the plant down like a couple times due to the levels. And we could do that this time of year because demand were low. And so rather than burn through the filters and waste a lot of water, you know, with real frequent backwashing, we chose to take some things offline. Levels have never really come down to where they should be since this all started in December. So.
I've driven by Lake Pyramid a few times, and it is just brown muddy. Yeah. And so I think you're going to have it for quite some time.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Deeper, public comment?
Public comment?
For this item?
Yes.
There is no public comment.
Thank you. And I think that's our last item, isn't it? Mr. Abercrombie, thank you.
Sure. In the essence of brevity here, I will. I just have one thing I wanted to kind of go through. I thought it was interesting because of the rains we've had recently. We have the ability to look at certain live feed
rain gauges from DWR and other sources around the valley. And, you know, this speaks to some of the issues we've brought up before with regard to precipitation measurements. And, you know, one gauge says this, one gauge says that. And this just sort of shows the, I guess, variation across the larger area in precipitation. So we looked at precipitation over the past 7-day period. So it took in last weekend and a few days of the week before before that. And so one of the measurements was at Castaic Lake in the very upper reaches of the two fingers of the lake, you know, pick either one, but they were between 9 and 9.5 inches of precipitation measured. The lower lagoon area of the lake measured less than 6 inches.
Wow, what a difference.
Castaic Junction, if you're familiar with that name, it's I-5 and 126. That was 6.5 inches. We get to Bokeh Canyon, that was 6 inches. Newhall Fire Station, which is the one we use for most of our reporting, that was a little over 9 inches. And Sand Canyon was almost 11 inches.
11 inches.
Yeah, so that, I just thought that was interesting. It points to the fact of what we really see around here. The other thing I wanted to talk about is just the water levels in wells. We've these graphs that were in your packet, they're really through the month of January. So they don't have anything to do with what happened in February. But at that point in time, I just picked three wells across the valley that I thought was interesting. One well W9, shows water levels coming up about 11 feet since November, basically, from all these rains. So the water levels that were up about 11 feet. One of our strongest wells, 207.
How deep is that well, do you know?
What, which well?
W9.
It's around 200 feet. Saugus well 207, since October, I think it was, October, November, it has come up 50 feet.
Yeah, so that may become a spring pretty quick.
It's about to the top. You know, the Saugus is under a little artesian head, so...
By chance, you took any sample?
I don't know exactly when, but I mean, we're constantly taking water quality samples. And then the last one I graphed for you was the Valley Center well. This again was the well we just put online back in October, November for with the PFAS treatment system, and that was up 7 feet since the end of October. And actually was at a record high for that well as far as water level. And we actually have had three wells during this time period, or currently as of January, that have reached record highs. And record meaning as long as we had data on the well. So if it was a 50-year-old well, that's 50 years. If it's a 20-year-old well, that's 20 years for that well. But we had a T7, Valley Center, and the Santa Clara well that all had risen higher than we've ever seen them before in those particular wells. And I would suspect we'll have a few more members of that club after February comes to close.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the Canyon Country area up there where the groundwater comes up, curves out of people's lawns.
Right.
That gets to be a real mess, and I would imagine this year it starts to do that.
Do you know if Rick's going to report any of this at the GSA board meeting?
I don't know. I can pass this on to him and
be a point of interest.
I mean, I'm sure he'll have some, whether it's the same data or other data. I'm sure he, because we sort of working on the same thing all the time, but he may present something different that'll tell the same story.
Very good.
Right.
And with that, I think
one question. So item 14, is Mike still on?
No.
Okay, no worries. The nomenclature on the wells, is that still in progress?
Yes. You're speaking to the discussion we've had as far as renaming facilities, whether it be wells, tanks, booster, you know, all those things. And so we have be a, you know, it's like Mike likes to say, it's an onion. And every time we think we've got it figured out as to this approach makes sense, we come up with some rationale as to why maybe that doesn't make sense. And so we're taking our time. There's no real rush to do it. We want to do it right and make sure we don't lose anything and that we can keep things straight. So.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Very good. Anything else from anybody?
Chairman Cooper, public comment on this?
Yes, ma'am. Anything?
Seeing none.
Okay. I don't have it, but go ahead.
It's the last time is the engineering report.
So oh, okay.
Could be on the
section report.
All right. I just have a very few items. I'll keep it very brief. We've been going quite a while at this, and I apologize for being so long, but we have a lot of things to talk about. So we are recruiting right now for an assistant engineer. We had one of our staff move over to Water Resources to work on their water conservation group. And so we are re-recruiting for that position. We had a total of 36 applicants, and from that, we are offering 13 interviews. So really good applicant pool for that position. Very excited. And we have some very good candidates that we're going to be able to bring in for that position. Good time, evidently, to be hiring for that spot. As we've talked a little bit about the weather, and Keith has told you the positives for our well, weather does a funny thing to construction. It makes it stop. So we have a lot of our projects, especially a lot of our spending for those projects, has been delayed pretty significantly this year. And it's not just the rain delay, but in order to do a lot of the grading work or earthwork that we have to do as part of these projects, we also have to wait for that to dry out. And so we actually need to see about a week without rain, and we haven't seen that very much since quite a while. So we've had a couple months of delay on some of these projects, and you will see that pretty significantly in our spending. So I just want to give you a heads up. Other delays we've had are due to material shortages, and we check this out with both our own projects, but also with the developer projects. Right now, switchgear and SCADA is taking about a year to get after you order it. The pumps are 6 to 8 months, depending on the type of pump and motors you're getting. And the pipe is actually an improvement. It's down from about 18 weeks to get ductile iron pipe to 12 weeks. So about 3 months after we approve a project, we will and have the material submittal approved, it'll actually get the pipe to the site. So I'm just giving a small update on those and some of the challenges we're facing out there with the construction. That's the summary, Matt.
Well, with the...
We'll do public comment first. Public comment and then what?
Public comment question?
Seeing none.
Thank you. with the delays in construction, just be glad you're not working for Mammoth Lakes Water District or the Water District. Yeah. you won't be able to open ground up there until probably late September.
It's in time for the next
fine ground.
So 36 applicants for that one spot. Where do you advertise? That seems like a lot.
We advertise in a number of different places, BC Water News. I do believe they do local papers, and sometimes we will reach out to other publications. And then we usually will let our, a lot of the consultants, we let them know, or we'll advertise through that group as well. Several of the applicants come from either other public agencies or some of the consultants, some of the good applicants we have on there.
And as far as the supply chain shortages, is that transportation or vendors producing the product have their own issues with materials?
Yeah, it depends on which one. I don't think a lot of it is transportation. I think a lot of it is the production. I think things slowed down with some of the materials when it was really, really needed. And so those are back-ordered, and the back orders have just continued. So hopefully we will, if we do have a lull, hopefully some of those times will improve.
Thank you. Back to you, Chad.
I was really surprised that only the two bidders on Dickinson
you know, that's an easy job, simple construction job, 2,000 feet of pipe. I sure thought there would be more more interest in that, but I guess contractors are just busy out there, right?
Yeah, they are still busy. They had some projects go. I was expecting a few more bidders. We definitely had some people calling and asking about it, and we were putting out the feelers, but possibly because it was night work and some of the traffic control issues and other items, they didn't want to move their crews around to accommodate that. That would be my guess.
Yeah, night work makes it difficult. Okay, with that, any other questions, comments?
No.
And then we'll leave.
All right.
You're a lot of stuff. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.